Well, before I introduce myself, I would like to ask you guys to do something that we used to do at an Alateen conference meeting. It was a God meeting, or I think we called it the higher power. I can't even remember what we called it. But I would like to ask each of you to just take a little moment of silence and invite your higher power to this meeting. I don't care what you believe in. I just want your God here with me, too. So just take a moment. I'm Elise. I'm a hopeful, eternally grateful Al-Anon and Alateen member. First of all, I want to get this out of the way. Let me qualify myself. I qualify myself for this program. I could give you a literal laundry list of the number of alcoholics and addicts I've had in my life, family members, friends. I collect them, apparently. But I qualify me for this program. Let me give you a couple examples right out the gate. My mom likes to tell stories about how I was so stubborn and independent that I wouldn't let her teach me how to walk. I was that kid that, like, she would say cookie, and I would just go, no. I wouldn't let her teach me anything. I knew everything from birth, apparently. You know, that was just one little thing. Another thing was I used to play in my dad worked at a restaurant. It's like totally against all health codes. But I would, some people play with cars. I played with lobsters on the floor. I couldn't have been more than four. I was probably three, actually. And I remember talking to the lobsters before they went into the pot and going, "You're going to a better place." I was counseling lobsters by age three. So really, I belong here. And I don't have time to talk about the alcoholics in my life. I mean, you'll hear a little bit about them, I'm sure, along the way. But I only got about 45 minutes and a lot of things to cover, so I don't have time to talk about them. And I've got plenty of my own life to talk about. So I started in this program in Alateen. My first meeting, oh, this is another sign. I picked a date because I couldn't remember the day in the month that I started. And I picked the Ides of March because I'm dramatic like that. So my first meeting was on or around March 15th, 1996. And I have been a continuing member ever since that day. I'm one of those weird, rare transitioned Alateens that they talk about, and I really wish there were more of me. And I've hopefully done my little part in Alateen service, and most likely will continue to do some to hopefully make sure there's a lot more of me in this program someday. I was trying to think, like, what do I talk about? 21 years in this program, you know. There's not a whole lot of time to talk about the before and the during in that much time. So I thought maybe I would just talk to you a little bit about what got me here. That 10-year bump that the speaker last night talked about. A little bit about the last year of my life. And I'm pretty sure that'll cover the most important pieces. So when I got to this program, or before I got to this program, I was very keenly aware of the spiritual malady that I had. I started to feel it really, really young. My mom and I talk a lot. She's one of my qualifiers, and she always used to tell me about how every time she drank, she'd feel a little bit more comfortable in her skin. And I told her that I felt exactly the same way, totally uncomfortable in my own skin, except nothing fixed it, and I tried everything. If there's one thing that Al-Anon's good at, it's obsession, and I obsessed about everything. I could obsess about a paperclip if you let me. But I tried all the healthy things and unhealthy things. You know, I was good in school. I did sports. I did the extracurricular activities and the leadership. And I also did a lot of the other side of things. You know, I tried sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I tried anything. I was an adrenaline junkie. And nothing made me feel okay. I started contemplating ending my life around age 9. I think, was around the first time. And, you know, I made some half-hearted attempts along the way, but I was thankfully never particularly committed to it. But the real issue was that I felt like there had to be more to life. And yet, the way I felt was that I was always walking around with this cloud just hanging over my head, raining down. And that really wasn't just because of the circumstances in my life. I did have a lot of craziness. You know, we managed to move like 15 times in the state of Connecticut. That's like a feat in and of itself, if anybody knows the size of that state. That was my mom's solution to most problems, was just pick up and move. You know, to run away from bills, to run away from the latest boyfriend, to run away, I don't know. I think I quit unpacking by the time I was like 10. I just like take out my clothes and stick my boxes in the closet, just wait for next year. So we moved around a lot, and the year that I was 10, my parents got divorced, and my dog bit somebody, and we got sued, and my house burned down, and we were homeless for 6 months, and then my mom picked up a second husband that was also an alcoholic, and we were just off to the races. And that was kind of the turmoil that was my life. We were just constantly up to something. And that was kind of how it felt inside my head. I was at this point where I was standing up against a wall, just sort of watching life happen. And just full-on reaction. I couldn't control what came out of my mouth or what I would do. You know, I was just as likely to be friendly to somebody as I was to, like, literally punch them in the face. I had some friends many years later tell me that they thought I had, like, multiple personality disorder. Because I'd, like, go into one class and I'd be all happy, and I'd come out and I'd be all angry, and then I'd go back and I'd be all sad. It was all over the place. To fast forward to all that, because that pretty much personifies how most of those years went. Around the time that I was 15, my mom got sober. And just like any other great Al-Anon, I was like, this is the solution to all my problems. You know, because she's going to get better, life's going to settle down, everything's going to be okay. It only took me, I think it was 13 months from the time that my mom got sober till when I came to my first meeting, knowing that I had my own problems and that I needed help. In that 13 months, I think I managed to cause more chaos than in the previous 15 years. I don't know. I was on my own spiral before my mom hit hers. I was, you know, off to the races. And shortly before I went to my first meeting, I was in this situation where I was being stalked by somebody that had abused me, and it was just absolute chaos. And I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating, I was cutting myself, I was burning myself. I was just a shell of a person. And I remember going to my mom, who was pretty newly sober and kind of shaky. She came up to me one day because I was literally just wandering around the house like some weird zombie. And she grabbed me and shook me, and she's like, "What is wrong with you?" And I just said, "I don't know." And I just kept saying it over and over and over and repeat. And I was crying, and I asked her to put me away. I was like, just send me somewhere. I was like, at this point in my life, I really thought that I was just too crazy, too broken, and that I just belonged in some, like, with a straitjacket in a little padded room, like, where I couldn't hurt myself or anybody else. I didn't have any friends. I locked myself away, and I didn't see much of a point to a life like that. And I, like I said, I couldn't commit to killing myself, so I figured, well, then commit me. And by God's grace, she did nothing. I know that sounds weird, but she didn't know what to do with that, and she didn't, you know, commit me. And it wasn't long after that. It was all very blurry. You heard I wasn't sleeping or eating or whatever, so it was practically hallucinating. But it wasn't long after that that I had my first spiritual awakening, and it was before I ever went to my first meeting. I had one of those experiences where I hit my knees crying, asking God to help me, and I was like, just to show me that I could live my life a different way, that there was something worth living for. Because at this point, I wanted to be able to say that, and I couldn't feel it. And it was not it was immediate. I'm sure some of you can relate to that experience. There was this immediate knowledge that there was a better choice, that there was a better way to live. And it wasn't long after that I went to my first Alateen meeting. So I am not your typical Alateen. I showed up to Alateen not blaming my parents or any of the other alcoholics in my life. I showed up knowing that I needed help and that it was up to me to figure out how to change my life. And thankfully, when I got there, I found out I didn't have to do it alone. And that was what kept me here. In Al-Anon, you know, there's a lot of focus on the steps and the traditions and the principles, which absolutely needs to be the focus. But in Alateen, there's a real focus on love. Love and acceptance and attachment. Because, you know, as a teen, you're usually living with your parents, and many, you know, are active in their diseases. And you can't just pick up and leave. You're not legally allowed to do that. So there's a different focus there in that you have to accept life on life's terms and just deal with your reality and figure out what you can do with it. And I'm so grateful that that was the experience I had, that that's when I was introduced to this program, because that's the foundation I come from. I don't believe in running away. I don't believe in trying to control the situation in my life. I believe in accepting what God puts in front of me to do. And I show up to it every day, whether I feel like it or not, because I know that that's what you need to do. You know, I know that there aren't any accidents in life. There aren't any coincidences. That my life is the way that it's supposed to be, that my God has designed for me, and that I need to face it and embrace it, you know, in order to get the lessons that I'm meant to learn here. So that was my introduction to the program. And I was off. I was all in, hook, line, and sinker. I drove 45 minutes one way, three times a week, to go to Alateen meetings up in Connecticut. And they were huge back then. There was, you know, 25, 30 kids in a meeting. And at the time, in Connecticut anyway, there tended to be one Al-Anon and one AA sponsor in every meeting. Flash forward, I was an Alateen sponsor of a meeting for about 9 years. And I can tell you, you sit in a room and see that some might end up in one room one day and some might end up in the other. And there was like something really beautiful about having both AA and Al-Anon program present in an Alateen meeting, because it was planting seeds that were really necessary, even for the people that chose not to stay. But I grew up at the tail end of what I'd like to call the tough love era of Alateen. You know, there, like I said, there was some hardcore sponsors in those meetings. One in particular, the speaker last night made me think of, and we called him Iron Mike. Everybody called him Iron Mike, and he didn't take anything, and he didn't let us be on a pity pot or complain or talk too long in a meeting. Or, I mean, he made sure we followed those principles. And let me give you a prime example of that. If he felt like somebody was going on too long or complaining about their parents too much or just trailing off and away from the meeting topic, he had this roll of toilet paper he'd pass around and until it got to you, and that's how you knew you were supposed to shut up. That was how I grew up in the program. And anybody who's been sponsored by me knows that I have the tendency to still do that. Not necessarily with a toilet paper roll, although that would be kind of funny. So that was, you know, I learned to have a really healthy respect for the meeting and what you share and what you don't share, and kind of, you know, the rules, so to speak, from those kind of meetings. And I'm glad I learned that, because I think it's very important in a meeting space for everybody to be able to share who wants to share, for it to be about the topic, and, you know, to share the mess before or after the meeting or with your sponsor. Because, you know, otherwise you're just taking up too much of the time. So those were my foundations in the program. Love, acceptance, and some tough love. As far as how I grew in the program, I did all the things that they told me to do. You know, I went to meetings, I had a sponsor, we went as Alateens to probably at least a half a dozen conventions a year. I would go to the Connecticut Alateen Conference, the New England Alateen Conference, the Connecticut Young People's AA, the New England Young People's AA, the Connecticut AA Convention, and the Al-Anon AA Convention. That was every year, minimum. And then from there, I'd see if I could fit in, you know, an extra one here or there. So I went everywhere. I went everywhere with my Alateen friends. My time in Alateen was pretty short. I started when I was 16, and I started transitioning out of Alateen into Al-Anon when I was 18, and stopped going to Alateen when I was 19. At the time, I was allowed to stay till I was 21, and there were many of my friends that sort of shunned me for the idea of leaving Alateen early, because we were all family. I mean, I literally have tattoos on my ankles from a couple of my Alateen buddies. Tell you a little bit more about where those other three are now. But I needed to. I'd gone off to college. I'd moved out on my own, and I didn't have teenager. I still was a teenager, but I was having to do adult things like pay bills, and it just didn't fit for me anymore. So I did the slow transition. I went to Adult Children of Alcoholics meeting, and then transitioned into Al-Anon. And I didn't feel at home, you know. Felt like they treated me like I was a newcomer, like I didn't know anything. I was young, and anyway, it was just, I didn't feel like I fit, and I feel like that's probably a large part of why some people wander off. But I knew I needed this for me, so that wandering off was not an option. So it was those conventions that kept me going. I wasn't going to the Alateen conventions anymore, but I went to a bunch of others. And I just kept doing that, kept myself in and around this program until I felt like I found a home in Al-Anon. And I didn't find a home in Al-Anon until I left Connecticut, which was, I think, about 5 years after I transitioned into Al-Anon. I moved from Connecticut to Georgia after I finished up college. I really wanted out of there. And when I left, it was like a spiritual calling to, like, leave and go learn something more about life. And I'm so glad I did. It brought me to Georgia. It brought me home. You know, it brought me to a home in Al-Anon and a home that was unlike any other home I've ever had. Because, again, I moved around a lot. Everything was always all over the place. I always just wanted a home. And I found that here. When I came to Georgia, I didn't know anybody, really. The one person that I knew took me to my first meeting was a girl that I was at her first Alateen meeting in Connecticut. So her and I don't really see each other too much, but she's in and around the program still. And I'm just eternally grateful for the fact that, you know, God put her exactly where I needed her to be to introduce me to the program here. So I started doing the tour. If anybody's been Metro Atlanta, you know there's like literally 100 meetings you could choose from. And I was trying to find my home. And I ended up finding my home for a better part of a decade at the Entirely Ready AFG group at the Biscayne Room. And that was like my new Iron Mike group. They didn't take anything. Like, there was definitely no wandering off topic. There was no not participating in service. There was no not having a sponsor. Like, if you even suggested that you were in between sponsors, somebody was, like, on you within 5 seconds telling you, you know, that you needed to fix that. But I'll tell you what, that seems all harsh and everything like that, but that was also a group of people that I did everything with. We went on cabin trips together. We went to conventions together. We met before and after the meeting. We had potluck dinner meetings together outside of the meeting. We were a family. We spent holidays together. And that was exactly what I needed, because I didn't know anybody here. You know, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody but my wife that I brought with me from Connecticut. I haven't even talked about that. Really, that will come up later, maybe, maybe not. but anyway, you know, I needed that, and I treasure the time that I had with that group. Life circumstances kind of took me away from that group of people, but it was exactly what I needed when I needed it, which is exactly what this program has always done for me. It's always put right in front of me exactly what I needed when I needed it. And if I just trust in my God, I know that that's what will happen. So, that 10-year bump, it happens to Al-Anons too, in case you didn't know. You know, I did all the things that this program told me to do. I've already told you that. It did not prevent coming to this turning point around 10 years in the program where I found myself at another spiritual bottom. I didn't even think that was possible. I was like, I'm never going back there. And sure enough, I was at that like 7-8 year mark in my marriage, and we had gotten to the point where we were taking each other for granted, pointing fingers at each other, telling each other what everybody was doing wrong, and we had a lot to point at. You know, despite my attempt at a spiritual living, I think in my relationship we did all the things you're not supposed to do to each other, all of them, for a good many years. And I know now what that was all about. I had some expectations about what that relationship was going to look like. When we got married, we were both in the program. You know, we were both working this spiritual life together. And, you know, happy little pair. And around 2 or 3 years in, that stopped being something that she was particularly interested in. And, of course, I was still fully committed. And then from there, it was like this double dutch, jump in, jump out, should I stay or should I go game. And I played that for so long. And what ended up happening, we just took each other for granted. And I'd lost focus of myself. What this program has taught me to do is to keep the focus on myself. I mean, that's the only thing I can do anything about anyway. You know, I mean, we've heard all the slogans or the statements before. You know, if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. So I had taken the focus off of myself. I had made her my God. And it was at that point. I mean, anytime you make anything but God your God, you're bound to have some sort of complete falling apart. And that's what happened to me. And I hit my knees. And instead, it wasn't, how do I live a different way? It was, what do I do now? I have a great relationship with my God. My God doesn't wait very long to tell me things. And the answer I got back to that was that I had to learn, that I'd learned how to trust a God in those first 10 years through working the steps with my sponsors. But I hadn't trusted myself. I didn't think I could really change. I thought kind of like that the principles of the program were the thing that were holding me together. But I was still living in this like Jekyll Hyde state where I still felt that demon on my shoulder, you know, telling me to do all the things that I had learned to do before I came to this program, and then like the angel was the one telling me to do the things that the program taught me to do, and I felt this split. And what I learned at that point was that I had to trust that I could really change, that I could make a commitment, and that demon wasn't just always going to sit on my shoulder talking in my ear telling me, you know, what to do. And so what that required, though, in those first decade, I worked the steps. And the steps are really all about you. That's what it needs to be. I needed to learn about myself, learn what I liked, what I didn't like, how to live. But the real key in the next 10 years was about my relationships with other people. And that required working the traditions. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that. Because what good is learning all about yourself and how you work if you can't do anything with anybody else out there? This is not a vacuum. We do not live by ourselves. And I was going to really need to actually learn how to have relationships. And for me, the traditions are what gave me that. You know, learning to take the things I'd learned about myself and apply them to other people, to accept other people as they are, And literally not judge them for it, you know. I didn't think that was possible. I didn't think I could stop the committee in my head. But, you know, I believe through my higher power, all things are possible. And to this day, I can honestly say, you know, I don't spend my time evaluating what I think about other people's behavior anymore. It's not my business. It's never been my business. I'm a full-time job. And any time that I'm not taking the time to look at it through what can I do about me, I've already failed. And I'll tell you, there was a prayer that came to me, my own little personal prayer, at that 10-year point that I have used daily, and sometimes many times in a day, to keep me on the path of putting things squarely in my higher power's court, and remembering what I need to do with myself. And I'll share it with you. It's, God, help me to see myself as you see me. Help me to see others as you see them. So I can connect the divine in me to the divine in them, so I may better do thy will. Thank you for all my triumphs and tragedies, for everything is a lesson that brings me closer to where you want me to go. Bless everybody in my life with complete trust and faith. I give them to your keeping. And thank you for everything, because I am truly blessed and loved. And I say that prayer every day. Every day and as many times as I need to remind myself of where my role is in this world and how I can relate to other people. And that prayer is carried by putting God front and center into everything in my life and inviting my higher power to help me manage just a simple conversation with another human being. My life has changed dramatically in the last 10 years in this program. In ways that I didn't think were possible. I thought, you know, I was good having a small, tight-knit group of like 5 close friends and, you know, having lots of acquaintances. Gosh, if you look at my life now, I have literally a village of people in my life, in and outside of this program, which I also think is pretty important. My sponsor tells me, and Bill says, you know, that we're supposed to practice these principles all our affairs and take the things that we learn here and bring them out into the world. I spent the better part of the first, you know, 10 or so years kind of hiding away in the program, which was necessary. I was broken. I was damaged. I didn't know how to put myself out in the world to begin with. But now I can see how important it is to go out there in the world and to practice these principles in all my affairs. Bill and Lois really believed that if people in this room did that, that we could change the world. And they weren't talking about everybody coming to this program. So I try to live that. I try not to be afraid to step out anywhere in the world and live the way that this program has taught me to live. So now, flash forward, one of the big sticking points in my marriage was how desperately I wanted children. And I'm married to a woman, not like, it doesn't happen by accident. we waited 13 years to start our family. And it took that long to get to a point in our relationship where, you know, we felt like we could be as selfless as I think you need to be as a parent. And we were very, you know, I trust my God to do everything for me, including figure out how we were going to pull that off. And that was all a really awesome experience. And it didn't take much. Pretty much by the time I was ready, we got the family car, and a month later we tried once and I got pregnant. That was it. Here we are, you know, about to be a family. And from there, it felt like the next 3 years of my life felt like a fairy tale. I've never had that experience, in the good kind, not the sad story. I had my son, and he was just the happiest, silliest baby, and he still is that one of the happiest, silliest toddlers. And, you know, we had, like, the American dream. We have the house, we have the cars, we have the kid, we have the jobs. We have our love, you know, our foundation is back. I consider her my best friend and my soulmate, and so we're coasting. Like, I'm like, life is great. But I've heard more than a few speakers this weekend allude to the whole life happens thing. And it does. But I really absolutely loved those 3 years of just ignorant bliss, you know, where everything was kind of going in my favor. And so about a year, how long ago? About 2 years ago. Yeah, okay. We wanted to have another kid. I always wanted to. I thought it was important for my son to have a sibling. And so we went down that path again. One try, got pregnant. It's really a good thing that she's female. I can't imagine how many children we would have. She said I'm really direct. She's not kidding. I don't know how to not say the things that come to my mind sometimes. So here we were on this ride again, and it was totally a different experience. I don't know if any of you have had multiple children, but if you have more than one, like that whole exalted first pregnancy where everybody bows down to you, does everything, doesn't happen the second time. I wasn't expecting it, but still, it was like, it's such a, you know, it's like, oh, well, you've done this before, and now you've got a kid to take care of, so, you know, it's like, you're just going to have to figure out how to do that. And I had a miserable pregnancy. I had bad sciatica both of my pregnancies, but that first time I was, like, so friggin' happy that I was going to be a mom, I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about the pain. I didn't care about it, any of it. And that second time around, because it was, like, old hat, it was just agony. It felt like agony for, you know, that 9 months. And about this time last year, I was getting my toes done because I was going to, you know, I was going to be having a baby. And, you know, figured that was something to distract me, you know, sparkly toes. And whatever. You know, whatever. The things you think are important. but anyway, I thought I was going to have, like, this easy labor. I think this is the second time. The first one was, like, 9.5 hours total from, like, first contraction to holding my baby. So they told me, don't waste any time. Come to the hospital. It's only going to be maybe 6 hours because, you know, it's supposed to go faster the second time. So that's where I was, like, a year ago. Well, because my son's birthday is in, like, 11 days. Flash forward about a week. And I ended up in this, like, on again, off again, really painful, like, 3-day labor. And nothing was like it was the first time around. And that has continued to hold true for about the last year. So here I was, you know, blissfully ignorant, wandering into, you know, motherhood for a second time. And I struggled through the labor. From the moment my son was born, I knew something was wrong. It's just something that moms know, I think. But everybody was like, no, everything's fine. Everything's great. Don't worry about it. He's good. He checks out. I mean, we're at the hospital, right? Well, he, you know, he would neat, and he was spitting up, and it was, you know, I was just like, there's something wrong. We had lactation counselors and nurses and doctors looking at him, and everything was okay, they said. But the next day, 24 hours later, it was, you know, about time to do the final check so that we could go. And there's this one thing that he hadn't done that you're supposed to do, and that's pass the meconium. Well, he decided right around the time he was supposed to go for his circumcision and final checkout to projectile vomit bile. And it turns out that he had a complete intestinal blockage and had to have a bowel resection. And we spent the next 7 weeks in the NICU. I had to accept another level of reality, we'll say. The contrast between birth one and birth two were pretty substantial, you know. I remember leaving the hospital with my first son, you know, they do the wheel you down, and you're still holding your baby, and they carefully get you in the car. This time, I walked. You know, when they discharged me, they handed me my papers, and I just walked over to the NICU. The next major spiritual awakening I had in my life came a couple of weeks into my NICU experience when they gave me my son's diagnosis. They told me he had cystic fibrosis. And I lost it. I mean, I hid in the bathroom because, you know, Al-Anons don't like to show their feelings in public. Because I had been tested. I'd been tested for that. You know, I was prepared. We had to plan a lot. And my test had come back negative. Turns out it was a false negative because I have a rare mutation. So I talk about left field. Wasn't expecting any of this. When they gave me his diagnosis, I mean, I immediately knew how serious the condition was, and I just went into the bathroom and I was sobbing, and I'm not one to plead with God. I don't do that. I don't think that's how life works. But I did that day. I remember just, you know, please, not this, anything but this. And I'm, like I said, I got a good connection with my God, and I got an immediate answer, and he said, this isn't about you. And so that's where I've lived for the last year of my life. This isn't about me. I made a choice to become a parent. And I knew before I ever did that, that meant that it was my job to be his mom. It was my job to be my kid's mom, regardless of what comes along with that. you know, this whole time dragging my feet to become a parent, sitting there worried about how, you know, I've got like one branch in my family and everybody ends up an alcoholic. To the point where when I came out to my grandmother about the fact that I was married to a woman, she sobbed and I was like, I don't get it. Why is that an issue to you? Why do you have a problem with me being married to a woman? But it seems to be, why is it more socially acceptable in my family to be a drug addict or an alcoholic than it is for me to be married to a woman? She didn't pause at all. Her immediate response was, it's not accepted, it's just expected. There you go. I've walked through a whole lot in the last year that I didn't think I could. And I didn't think I had another, you know, spiritual giant, you know, burning bush awakening in me, and I was wrong. I have learned more about myself and my relationships with others and feelings in the last year than I ever thought I would. Something that Al-Anons can be way too good at is compartmentalizing our emotions. And that's been impossible since I became a parent, and particularly impossible in the last year. This is just, I know that I'm in this new book. I'm not even in a new chapter in my life, and I know that the road I have in front of me is not the easiest. Maybe it won't be as dramatic as the last year. I mean, the last year has been like exploding ostomy bag interesting. Hope we don't have that kind of level of interesting that often. But I'm just kind of coming off of the drama of it all, really. You know, just starting to wrap my head around all the things that I've learned and kind of, you know, the what to do next. My God knows what I need. You know, I'd kind of reached a point in my life where, I didn't think there were lots. Big lessons or new things that I needed to learn. But, you know, my God has a sense of humor. For example, I'm not good at regimens, like routine, like doing the same thing. I mean, I know that's a joke. I've been in program for 21 years and I'm obviously doing this. But other than that, outside of that, I don't do exercise routines. I don't do the same thing over and over again. I don't keep a schedule the same every single day. It's just like not even in my wheelhouse to do that. Ironically, my son's condition requires a very regimented daily routine of treatment and supplements, and everything's scheduled and everything has to be measured and everything has to be done. And I'm like, really? I have to get good at that too? Like, what's that about? So, you know, I'm way outside of my comfort zone, you know, but again, apparently that's what it would take for me to learn something new, is that commitment I feel. That my sponsors taught me that my only job is to be the best friend, best wife, best mother, best sponsor, best sponsee, you know, that I could be. That my job is to bring the best version of myself to everything that I do. So because it's for him, all of a sudden I can do it. You know, I never could do it for myself, but I could do it for him. I mean, that's just one of the many, many things. You know, I was joking with somebody before the meeting that... I thought at least with my kids, because I waited so long and I'm making sure that I'm giving them a different life than the life that I had, that, you know, they'd have this leg up in the world. It's a really bad idea to have expectations about things. That's, you know, everybody hopes the best for their children. And my older son was an example of this. You know, sometimes he thinks he has it so rough and we don't give him any slack. We're like, you don't know what rough is. But along comes my second son, and right out the gate he has to fight for his life. And he's always going to have to. He's always going to have to be able to muscle through, you know, whatever comes before him just to get through a day. And I can't even relate to that. Yeah, I mean, a little bit, but I've never had to do that. So here I am, having to be the parent of this kid who's having to deal with stuff I never had to deal with. It's like no life experience for me to impart on him for this. But I know what I do have. And I know... what I can give him, and it's what you guys gave me. And that is the ability to accept life on life's terms. I mean, he seems to already do that, you know. I mean, he's a baby, but he rolls with it. I mean, the things I've seen him roll with, he's just got this smile that's from ear to ear, even when he's in pain. And it's just, when I see that, I go, there's nothing I can't do, or there's nothing I won't try if he's willing to do that. So he makes me bring the best version of myself to every day. You know, the days that I've wanted to crawl under the covers, or the days that I've wanted to just, you know, cause destruction in my life because I'm feeling so bad or whatever. I show up and do what this program taught me to do, because that's what life's about. And because of that, because of that, we can smile and we can laugh and we can enjoy life. And we didn't bury ourselves in this experience. You know, we go places. We live life. And we're not going to stop doing that. And even coming up to this week, he had a doctor's appointment Thursday that didn't even end until like 4 p.m. And that doctor's appointment was like many others he's had, which he could have ended up being admitted to the hospital after. He's got some things going on right now, and they don't really know exactly what's causing it. So I didn't know. I didn't know as of Thursday afternoon whether or not I was really going to be able to be here for the whole weekend, or whether I was going to have to, like, drive down here, speak, and drive right back to the hospital. And, you know, by God's grace, you know, they have some concerns, but they felt like it wasn't critical and that he could come home and we could just keep doing what we're doing. And so that's what all week I was planning for a babysitter on Sunday so that me and my wife could go to the Falcons game, and I was planning to not be here and have to be at a hospital, like, and everything in between. And that's just my life now. It's a life that kind of lives a bit on the extremes, and somehow that kind of fits me. It works. I've always been one to plan for contingencies, and lo and behold, I have a life that requires that. You know, I've talked before about life, that I actually think life might be fair, because it seems to me like everything in my life is perfectly crafted to fit exactly who I am, and I don't question that. Again, you know, regardless of what shows up in front of me, I show up. My life's, I couldn't have planned the life I have today at all. I'm a far way from where I grew up and what life looked like, and I couldn't trade any of it, you know, without giving up everything that's beautiful about it, and everything that I love about my life. You know, I've asked myself, you know, would I rather go back to the days where all my craziness was just in my head and not necessarily out here in life? And no. No, absolutely not. From the day that I came into this program, I made a commitment to myself that I was not going to hide away in my head and hide away from whatever life brought in front of me. And I love my life today. I love it. It's bruises and bumps and its ugliness and its beauty and everything about it. I love it. I love it, and it's the life that my God has given me. And I know that this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning of a journey, and I embrace what comes next. I don't believe in standing still, and I don't believe in hiding away, and I don't believe that I believe that everything happens for a reason. So, if I could impart anything to you, it's that I live and breathe what this program has taught me, and it's the only reason I have a life. The only reason I have the gifts that I have in my life today, and I carry it with me in everything that I do. So I certainly hope that some of you in here have heard a thing or two that spoke to you, and maybe you realize a little bit that Al-Anons really aren't all that different from alcoholics. I like to say that they're exactly the same. The only difference is that I don't have the allergy to alcohol. I thank you for this opportunity to be vulnerable, to have a story to share with you, and I hope that it spoke to some of you. Thank you.